Why are people eating Infinite Jest? What connects Paris Hilton and Jonathan Franzen? How did RuPaul change the world? And how do you win Come Dine With Me? All these questions and more are answered in Unpopped with me, Hayley Campbell. Each week, we dissect a pop culture artifact, from Seinfeld to the Spice Girls to David Lynch. The Unpopped podcast with me, Hayley Campbell. Find us and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Where did the idea for the entertainment come from? Because that's the bit that I always found alien. Everything else was a regular dinner party, but, you know, getting people to belly dance or whatever.
Yeah,
to
be absolutely honest, that has sort of evolved, I think, just to keep the variety going and because it affords so much opportunity for belly dancing, belly laughs. I don't think it is really part of how people entertain. And to be honest, I prefer the house tours to the after dinner entertainment. But I mean, I like one dress up per week. I think that that's funny. Like it when someone says, yeah, you've all got to come as Teletubbies. But doing some inviting your mate round to do a magic show is never my favourite bit. So, I mean, it's even with the after dinner entertainment, you get to learn something about what someone has chosen. Mm. It's a little bit about them. And people embrace it. They really throw themselves into it. There's a huge variety of after dinner entertainment out there.
I mean, in boring prosaic terms, it fills time. Yeah, we've got 19 really amazing minutes here and we need 23 amazing minutes. And so there's your other four.
Do you ever think about what your entertainment would be?
Oh, goodness. I mean, that is the sole reason that you wouldn't do it, right?
I would definitely do it.
Because entertainment, one thing you know about the end of a dinner party is you're all quite drunk.
And yes. When
you're all quite drunk, just let's keep talking or play games or something.
Yes.
Let's definitely not invite some flamenco dancers in. You know, imagine if someone says, and even better than the fact you've got drunk and had a really nice conversation, now I'm going to make you do some flamenco dancing
in the living room.
You just think, oh God,
squashed in among the three-piece suite.
And there's always one guy who's just sort of standing on the edge, not quite, just sort of shuffling from foot to foot.
Yeah, the one that always makes my heart sink is when they say on the menu, pudding will be served with a surprise. Bring a swimsuit. What could that be? And
the idea that anybody wants to eat panna cotta
in a hot tub.
No, I'm all in favour.
I love to see people.
One of the things about the show was that Adam McDonald always wanted an older person on the show, by which he meant over 55, which is a little bit depressing because that doesn't seem so old to me anymore. But I actually think it's an opportunity for older people who turn out to be the most brilliant TV to have their say about stuff. And those older people, they hop in a hot tub, you know, before you can say.
Imagine a Tamworth hot tub. I mean, that's essentially like the soup.
Yeah.
But those intergenerational friendships, though, I think that's a very special part of it, isn't it? When you get the people at the end of the week a little bit tipsy on, you know, day five going, I didn't think we were going to get on, but actually you're a great person. And,
yeah.
And you get that as well on like the Bake Off, I think, rarely, but shows like that that bring those people together and don't set them up for conflict. I think there's still something quite special and rare about that.
I think that's the thing, you know, I'm a great defender of very traditional reality TV, which I would say this is, which is a staged competition with a winner. It, by and large, it's produced in a way to let the underdog win. You know, almost always. I can rarely think of a reality show, certainly in the old days, where the underdog wouldn't win. It's changed a bit these days. But, you know, even early Big Brothers, Come Dine With Me's, Bake Offs, the underdog, the person, you know, people are very good at spotting who the underdog is and very good at rooting out a bully.
You're listening to Unpopped. Nick Hornby's High Fidelity was released around the same time as Bridget Jones. How have the legacies of the two authors compared?
I think the clever thing that Nick Hornby did was no character in Fidelity, in High Fidelity, was as interesting as Bridget. And so he has managed to stake a place in the sort of literary canon by not having this character that everybody endures with quite such ferocity.
Andy's pulling a face.
Disagreement is
coming. No, I'm just trying to think.
Fight! It's a fight!
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 No, it's not a fight. It's not a fight. I think that is a perfectly fair interpretation of the careers of those two writers, but I slightly think they are trying to, they were trying to achieve different things. And also you have to remember that Hornby comes out of a place of memoir, that he starts with, although you're right to mention High Fidelity, mm-hmm. High Fidelity is the novelised, his first novel, in a sense, is a novelised version of Fever Pitch, his previous book about football. Now, mm-hmm. I hate football, right? I've written, my first book was about how much I dislike all sport. Mm-hmm. So I am not
Was it
infected.
Called Fever Pitch?
Yeah, right, I should have been. I would have sold a few more than that. But Fever Pitch is a really wonderful book, right? I hate football. I must have read Fever Pitch three or four times. Again, because it does a similar thing, I think, to Bridget Jones's Diary, and perhaps the same is true of High Fidelity, that it captures a type of person, in this case a man, in the early to mid-90s, who hadn't really been represented in books. Let's not even say fiction or non-fiction, in mm-hmm. books. What's interesting about Hornby is he then goes off and does all sorts of other different types of books.
You're listening to Unpopped. Are the conspiracy theories still going even though the band is on hiatus?
Yeah. Yeah. The tags are fresh. They're active. I wouldn't have it any other way, to be honest. It's how I start my day. Yeah, they're active. And although a lot of the fans have grown up, a lot of the fans were super young when they started getting involved in these communities. Probably, you know, their first fandom, their, you know, their first fan accounts. So it's as much about the community and friendship of this kind of global fandom as it is about actually the updates, the news, where when they landed at LAX and, you know, where they've bought their new house in the Hollywood Hills and stuff. But they're very active.
Has the rumour mill kind of hurt the band, or is it making them bigger?
It's probably a two-part question, isn't it? About, I think it probably has made them as a group bigger, hasn't it? Because people are so invested in them, and it's kind of then a ecosystem of its own. Doesn't need any fuel from like publicists or management, and they don't have to. I think it's an interesting question about whether it has hurt them personally, because one of the things to kind of observe is the different ways in which they've responded to it and how that perhaps reflects on them. Because it's always seemed like Louis is a lot less happy with the Larry. Harry seems a lot more chill about the whole thing, and Louis seems a lot more uptight. And then there's a question about what does that say about them individually, I guess.
Yeah, like for instance, when the Larry ship really took off, you would notice that they weren't pictured together anymore. They wouldn't be standing next to each other in the lineups for press shots, or even just when they're traveling together. And that, you know, you can only imagine like the actual stress that would cause when you're receiving millions of these comments a week about something that you feel
that you weren't even aware of as well. So a lot of where this stems from is people like poring over interview clips where the two of them are sort of like brushing elbows, or one of them's looking at the other while they're talking, and you know, in small gif form, it looks like they're longingly staring into each other's eyes. And I guess when you become conscious of the fact that that's, it's like when someone tells you, asks you how you walk, and you suddenly become very conscious of your arms and your legs. You're like, how do I walk? I don't really. So I imagine it put quite a strain on the natural repartee with each other. Like, they suddenly became like, oh, I shouldn't say that, in case.
Yeah, because if you're in a band with five tomorrow. People and you can't make eye contact with one of them, that is quite restrictive, isn't it? In terms of.
And then Zayn leaves, so it's even harder.
The odds are even worse.